Good evening. My name is Optimus Prime, leader of the Autobots, and I send this message to all the listeners of Macross Speaker Podcast, scattered throughout the stars. The following episode will contain spoilers for the greatest pop culture event of the century that begins with the letter D. You know what I'm talking about. I am, of course, referring to Transformers Devastation, the awesome video game experience, available on PS3 and 4, Xbox 360 and 1, Steam as well, I think, and, yes, what's that, Bumblebee? Look, I can't understand what you're saying. At times like this, I wish you could just talk. I mean, it's getting kind of old, you know, the whole thing. Oh, for goodness sake, give me that. Okay, let's see here now. What's December 26th, Macross Delta. What the hell is Macross Delta? Delta? Delta?
Delta?
Delta!
Did you say Delta?
Delta!
Delta?
Delta.
Delta.
Delta!
Delta no sora wo tsuranuite.
Delta!
Oh my god, Annika, I think they're talking about Delta.
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 There better be some destroids in this.
Yakti culture, everyone. It's December 26th, and the Speaker Podcast crew is sitting here in some seedy little back alley bar in Kabukicho, having just walked out of the...
Blackjack and hookers.
Okay.
Everyone went quiet part. In the bar.
We've just come out, of course, of that movie everyone's talking about, Star Wars The Force Awakens.
And it sucked.
By which I meant Macross Delta. Yes, we've come out of episode one of Macross Delta, and we're here to talk about it real time, on the spot, get our thoughts down while we can. We're not editing this, we're not going anywhere, we're just doing it on the fly, so it's maybe a bit messy, but bear with us, because there's a lot to talk about. So on my left I have...
Renato.
Known as Renato.
And next to Renato we have...
Say, also known as Adrian.
Next to Adrian we have...
Egan, that's all I can go by.
And of course this is your host, Gwyn Campbell, otherwise known as Torture on the Forums. A word of warning in advance, there are going to be a lot of spoilers in this recording. However, we will try to do a spoiler-free segment first, and we'll give due warning when the spoilers kick in.
All right, the spoilers are kicking in now.
Okay, well, let's...
It's a cartoon.
There you go. Oh my god, really? All right, so let's start with what we can talk about without major spoilers. General animation quality, guys, what did y'all think? Compared to Frontier...
Standard satellite TV quality animation.
Yeah, that sums it up pretty much.
Yeah?
Satellite is mostly a 3D animation studio. They don't really do much Sakuga there. Sakuga that there was there. Even during the Frontier period, it was like not as high quality as other anime. But the 3D was much higher quality than other anime.
One thing we can mention is that they specifically said this is 0.89 version of this episode. So we were definitely going to see, you know, changes by the time the final version comes out.
Also to mention previously, after they showed the trailer and after we talked to Tengen, we had asked Tengen at a restaurant how much of that footage is test footage, and he had said 80%.
So even what we saw today or tonight was not necessarily final. There is 11% missing. 11% missing.
He was very...
By
Kawamori was very specific about that percentage.
By because we had a talk show by Kawamori and Tengen and the director and the producer afterwards,
and the writer.
And the writer. So the animation quality, standard satellite 2D stuff. I know there was a lot of concern about the CG stuff going by early trailers. How did you guys find the CG on the mecha and whatnot?
It was, I thought, pretty decent. The main thing we noticed is that when we could follow action, it was great. It was smooth, well choreographed. But then when it came to the parts that were fast, they were as fast as the second Frontier movie and almost too fast to catch and follow, at least. What did you guys think?
I agree. It was too fast, even on the big screen. A lot of the stuff you couldn't see what was going on.
And we were three rows from the front, and we still couldn't see what was going on.
During the city battle, in the space battle, you could see everything. But it was just... overall quality was okay. Again, it's television broadcast quality. It's not Frontier 25th anniversary, they put more effort than they needed to into it. Television, the culture version, standard version. I thought it had less detail because Tengen's not doing the same thing he did for that production, which is doing the 3D textures. That's missing.
On some scenes they were there, but some scenes it was notably missing. And amazing spaceship flyby sequence that would have been amazing if there was actually texture.
Right. I was thinking the same thing. Right. The Star Wars opening.
Are you talking about the freighter or the opening where
the freighter?
Yeah, the freighter scene looked like it reminded me of Orgus. I don't know why. It was like the opening of Orgus done in 3D via the Shadow Chronicles or something. But
wait, why do you have to ruin it now?
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. It was incomplete, not incompetent.
That's true. And it was blown up. That's about the screen.
That is half of the animation, though. What did you think about the character animation?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. The Sakugai itself, I don't think satellite-produced shows really
excel give, in that department.
They don't really give the quality that is the standard right now in 2015. I'm very very impressed with things that that are on right now, like One Punch Man and Lupin the Third and all this stuff. Like Lupin the Third is like TOMS, right? TMS and Telecom. So those studios are well known for cell animation, and that's what you go towards those shows for. I wasn't expecting anything. I wasn't expecting to be blown away, but I was expecting, not before the screening, but before anything regarding Delta had been announced, I was expecting the next show to be a bit like that Macross Card Fighter CM that we watched, the commercial, where it was all like hand-drawn, very very dynamic, almost in a Trigger style, almost like a new Gainax style. You know what I mean?
It was mixed. It was a mixed bag for me, that particular season.
Yeah, because we had heard that a lot of people, because I guess Big West paid for that outside of the usual production, and no one knew who did it, and a lot of people considered it very amateurish.
Thought it was fantastic.
It was eye-catching. It was eye-catching until you think about some of the sequences, and there, you can, if you know where the cheats are, you see them.
I know, but you can say the same about all animation in Japan, right?
It's all about
cheating,
cutting
right?
corners where
exactly.
you need to, excelling where you need to.
Yeah.
For a CM for a phone game, that was really awesome. But if that was the quality for a TV animated broadcast, that would have been like watching Nanoha or something.
Yeah, and that. It's got pretty good reviews, man.
I've been to that studio. They don't do a great
The tricky
work.
Part when it comes to talking about Macross and animation is historically Macross series have gone up and down wildly from episode to episode.
Right.
Whereas the first episode, usually they showcase the best animation can do, but then starts going downhill and then goes up and down depending on how important they view that particular series and therefore which of the key animators they hire for those episodes.
Overall, I thought it looked pretty good. This whole week we've been seeing reveals of characters and their profiles and stuff. They look better than that. In motion, they look a lot better than the line art that we've seen.
I thought the character animation looked better than we got in Frontier, definitely. So it was definitely a step up from Frontier.
Definitely inconsistent.
If Frontier was the last satellite animation you've ever watched, then this will seem like a certain step up. If you've kept up with everything I've done since then, you'll detect very similar color palette, animation style, drawing style.
Well, that goes for every studio. Madhouse, you're saying like One Punch Man? Madhouse never fails. They just lose a lot of money. But Production IG, which does not as much animation as they used to, but it all looks the same. Every Production IG, I've said it before on the cast, but always looks the same. Same colors, everything.
Yeah. So you mentioned characters, Renato. Within what we can talk about, the characters without giving away the plot. As you mentioned, those initial profiles, a lot of them look very generic. There are so many of them.
Commented about they were amazed and how basically all 16 characters that they reviewed on the website, they more or less all of them showed up in that first episode.
Which is the downfall of the episode, personally.
Well, as characters then, before we get into the story and spoilers, were they as lackluster and tropish as they looked in those initial designs from what we got and what we can tell in one episode, or was there more there?
Yes and no. Like that cyborg person or robot person or whatever it was behaved exactly like I thought she would do, having seen other cartoons.
She was like from a Miku music video,
yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah.
Who was that?
A kind of Erika, kind of Rei Ayanami kind of personality.
We all saw there was one of the idols that was a mecha geek. We all got really.
We all knew, yeah.
And no, but it worked. She was basically our voice, the people who are mecha geeks.
Yeah. I'll say one thing in favor of it. It had like 16 characters, right? I know, I was never confused as to who was who.
Yes. Very distinctive characters, despite. Just like Evangelion Sadamoto, he has a very distinctive facial look that most of his characters have. There's enough differences between these different characters from this relatively new anime character designer that still look distinctive for each.
Could you imagine Mikimoto designs? If they asked Mikimoto to design these 16 girls or whatever, I mean, let's face it, they'd all look the same with different colors.
We would like it. But
it would look good, but I wouldn't know who was who. Go ahead. Adrian's bursting to, like...
It kind of ruined my moment because you kept talking, but I'm just saying. How you're saying, like, all these characters for you, it made sense. But this is coming from a guy that almost speaks fluent Japanese and a guy that has to report anime news for his job. So these are, like, researching people that researched everything, translated everything in their own mind or to the public, and went in knowing everything. Right, I loosely looked at shit, and I was pretty much lost.
That's true. I mean, I didn't remember who everyone was. That's not what I mean. But I do know that that girl was not the girl from the previous scene, and then this is a new girl.
Character I remember is Jack Baker. That's it, and that's all because of dumb Robotech fans.
We're going there.
I will say that most of the Macross series, the first episode is a big old info dump in terms of getting all the information, not just for new fans coming in, but for the old fans, getting them up to speed. All this, what's new, and this has even more of an obstacle to overcome because there's a lot more history it tries to ram through in the first couple minutes so they can get on with the story.
Right, and that is something we'll get to in the spoilers momentarily, which, look, there obviously isn't much we can talk about here without getting the spoilers. So before we do that, just general overall impressions. Did you like it? Was it what you would think it would be? Are you looking forward to it? Did it feel like Macross? Just very generally, give us some general, and I've said general plenty of times in a row there, that's the alcohol talking.
General Galaxy.
Impressions before we get into the spoiler-filled plot breakdown.
Intriguing. I definitely want to see what's coming up next. There's enough things that are presented to us, but enough that was held back, so you want to know what's coming next.
I'm going to kind of compare it to the opening animation to Macross Dreamcast M3.
Oh,
it's
kind of like, let's go, get it on. Come on,
you kind of watch it and you're like, yes, 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 insects, bugs will never work in Macross. But then they do the Vajra, and it worked. I'm kind of on the fence. To me, I'm almost looking at it like, this is pretty far removed from what I'm used to. Even comparing it to Frontier. Like, so I'll get more into it later, but...
So you mean it's less Macross than Frontier, more Macross?
It's less Macross than Frontier, even though it's taking all the cues from Frontier. Where the original Frontier took cues from the original show, now they're going off of Frontier and going into an area that has not been experimented in, really. Mm. Like, they're going full bore into a specific type, and it's pretty new it's pretty new ground, I think.
I liked it overall. I have no problems with it. It is a mess, I will say that. It is all over the place, to the extent that if you were going in cold without any prior knowledge of, you know, even Frontier or Zero or Macro, you would have no idea what is going on, what the world is, what the background is. So I've never cared about any of that. I don't really care about story either or characters, and I'm just very, very
interested. What do you care about?
Animation.
Okay.
I was entertained.
I do have a good friend of mine who doesn't have any clue whatsoever of Macross. I do plan to sit her down when the stream comes out and watch it, because we have the perspective of someone who knows all these cues coming in. I like to see what she thinks with this huge info dump of an episode and if she enjoys it or not.
Yeah.
We don't have that perspective.
And what about you, Totoro?
It was not what I was expecting. If I had to give it a percentage, I'd put it around the 70% mark, because it's not what I was expecting. It's not necessarily what I wanted, but it has the potential to go more in that way, as we'll get to in a moment. But I think we should also point out the question that's been asked quite often, who's doing the music? It is not Yoko Kanno.
Unless he's writing under a pen name, which has happened before.
Right, there were three different composers listed under the music section. I didn't recognize any of the names.
The funny thing is, even the Japanese people in the audience, I think everyone was so surprised that there was three names. Even among our friends who watched it with us, people on Twitter, no one was able to catch all three names, because everyone was looking for that one credit, one music. But three names showed up, and we were all shocked.
It was three names, and then we had two producing credits under the names.
Yes.
So five people overall involved with the music. It's not Kanno. That's the important takeaway here. And also, we don't know who the entire cast are, because they had the cast's names in a different language. This isn't much of a spoiler, I think, to say there's two brand new languages that have been invented for this show on top of the normal Zentradi. Each one has 38 letters. And the voice actors' names were written in these new alphabets. They're keeping them secret until, I don't know, the premiere or the broadcast or something. So there's obviously some sort of surprise.
Yeah, that's but how do you decode that?
Good question. So everyone going to this screening, and it was a fan club only screening, got a Macross Delta card. On the back had one of the letters of one of these alphabets. And the idea is all the fans get together, because the show is about groups. As the character,
team effort. Yeah. They made a specific point, like, compared to other series, they're going to emphasize more teamwork, everyone working together. And that is one of the themes that they're working with this campaign.
It's morphin' time!
So they want the fans to get together and swap card pictures, work out the alphabet, and decipher the voice actors and actresses' names. Now, if you've been on Twitter anytime around when we're recording this, you'll probably notice all the Macross fans on Twitter, in Japan at least, are tweeting these pictures of these weird-looking symbols. That's exactly what we're talking about.
They did point out to staff that they wrote one of the character names, the cast members' names in that foreign language, but we know who that character cast member is. So that's the start of how we can decipher it.
That's your keystone for deciphering. Right.
The Rosetta Stone is out
there. Rosetta Stone, right.
Yes. One thing we can mention is the musician, one of them, caught people's eyes. Saeko Suzuki, because she's done previous work. Lagrange is one of them.
Lagrange, the one that was...
Yes.
The one that you were praising so much in the beginning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we brought it up, like, how's that going?
Oh, f*** that show. I don't ever... The music is... And she also worked on Karakariko Uso, Sergeant Frog. So she's done other work. That's why that name popped out for a lot of people among the three names. So there is one person who's not Yoko Kanno who's on the credits.
Anything else is not spoiler related?
I think nearly everything else fits into spoilers.
There's Valkyries in it.
Yeah, there's a lot of Valkyries in it. There is no Gojira. It's not a spoiler, it's just a fact.
There are no insects.
Yeah, there's no insects. Even though it reminded me of M3.
Let's just get into it.
Let's get into it.
All right, spoilers. Let's go through. Oh my god, magical girls. It's a magical girl show, guys.
Yeah.
Among other things.
I mean, like, with the transformation sequences and everything.
Exactly.
You know? The Pretty Cure and we have like, girls Sailor Moon, it's that. It is that.
Should we, like, build it up to, like, go through it and then build up to that scene? Because, I mean, that's in the middle.
There's three stages that we went through as going, oh, okay, whoa, what's that doing?
It's this kind of show. And then it's this kind of show.
I think you should go back to the front, because it starts off like Frontier.
So, let's open. We get to the beginning. Yeah. We have a galaxy map. Right, they show the fleets going through the galaxy map, much like Frontier, different angle.
A little bit more dynamic, but other than that, there's going to be a couple of Easter eggs we saw in there that we can talk about later.
Well, we can talk about one now, and that is one of the planets obviously had the name of a major character. So, and this went into something that was revealed after the show, which I think fits in here all right. Kawamori revealed that there's going to be multiple planets. They're still designing some of them. So this is going to be a conflict or a syndrome, a virus, a problem that goes across multiple worlds. So,
and that sounds awesome, because I haven't seen that in Macro before.
Really?
So, when we say multiple worlds, we also mean multiple star systems. They made a point in that map, and they also mentioned multiple plural. So we're talking, wide swaths of the galaxy. Well, yeah, we'll see.
So we start off with basically the Pacific Rim introduction, but a lot shorter and a lot quicker. Here's the story so far. There's the Vaz syndrome, and it gets to people, and they go kind of crazy, and oh my God, here's a guy with a bomb committing an act of terrorism and self-destructing in a public place.
Yeah, so all that exposition in the first minute is what I thought the first episode was going to be about. They've already said, okay, there's all these fleets that are colonizing the universe, the galaxy, and then there's this Var syndrome, and then there's this way to fight the Var syndrome, which is the Valkyrie, these girls, and then there's this, and there's that, and I'm like, what? But you've got to know also the basic history of Macross on top of this.
Which they did in Frontier. They didn't do it for this.
Oh, yeah, but
they didn't
do it for this. Macross 7 did it long enough. We don't need that anymore.
But that's what it is. That was...
Thank you, Haku.
Do it again.
Thank you, Haku.
Anyway, the scene, the whole terrorism scene, it's the terrorism scene, it's not even like still shots. It's actually animated. Yes. And it is... As everyone's joking around, it better be grit. It better be some real grit.
Yeah.
And it was really gritty. It was
first, like,
wow.
10, 15 minutes. Yeah. Were
pretty darn gritty, yeah.
It's pretty much Islamic State kind of stuff.
Yeah, it seemed like it was setting the tone of this new show, even though it didn't match up with what was being shown in the trailers.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, okay, all right, this is crazy. And then when they get the virus, it's almost like, Macross Plus the movie, when, Gold is, going in through the atmosphere, and he's...
Faces all veiny
and stuff. It's like, this is some pretty
we
crazy
were thinking,
shit.
It looked more like a zombie or a horror kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, like 28 Days Later kind of a thing.
Right, and the thing is, when it says this starts aggression, they're saying that this is breaking out in areas all over the place. The planet that this is on, they've got an early warning system, so they detect anyone who gets this sudden outbreak of this syndrome, and suddenly they send in, as we'll get to, the Valkyria and Delta Squadron to put down these
but that planet looks like some Middle Eastern country, right?
Well, and it looks like Jakku, basically.
And the thing is, I was watching this going, is the Var syndrome supposed to be some kind of like a metaphor for something? Is this social commentary?
Well, it does seem, as far as episode one shows, to mostly affect Zentradi. Most of the people infected seem to be some shade of green.
They don't say it only affects Entradi, but the characters that we see that are affected.
Right.
So far, it's just
so far.
Entradi.
No one is innocent.
So far. All right, so let's get into this then. So we get this terrorism scene, boom, but then we go back to Freya Vion, who is the idol character who was originally announced back at the reveal.
And we find out for certain she's not an idol yet. She's an aspiring idol. She wants to be.
Yep.
She illegally came to this country like Egan Liu and is trying to follow her dream.
She's
like Egan Liu.
Well, she's stowing away on this ship, but the thing is, she wasn't originally stowing away. They knew she was on it. Then they're trying to capture her. It turns out she's got one Milen trait from Macross 7, that is, she's trying to avoid getting married. She's supposed to get married, but at the same time, she really wants to sing. So these two motivations mean that she hides on the ship, gets off as soon as she can when it docks, and she thinks it's docking at a planet where they're, in 1 week from now, holding Wild Cure tryouts for new people for the Wild Cure unit. Yeah. She gets off. It turns out she's on the wrong planet. She's 30 light years, I think it was, from where she's supposed to be. And she meets up with...
Hayate something.
Immerman.
Immerman.
Hayate Immerman. After a particular aviation term about... Yeah. A fancy acrobatic move.
Right, and he is basically a dock worker.
Well, before you go on, Freya, the character herself, right, she wants to participate in this audition for the for the idol things. So there already you've got some kind of meta stuff going on, because the voice actress, as we know, is the winner of the Macross.
Yeah, she did come from some back country place in Japan,
right,
trying to make it big.
Right, so. And I don't know if you remember her voice in the Tamashii Nations exhibit. Mm-hmm. That's the first time we heard the character, right? She didn't speak with that accent. In this episode, she spoke with a kind of Kyushu-style accent.
A little bit of a bumpkin accent. Mm.
Yeah. A bumpkin accent?
A country bumpkin.
Okay.
But I have to point out, though, for a newcomer, I thought she was really... Her voice acting was really good.
Yes.
Now, we just came back from... Immediately after the screening, we had dinner with a bunch of Japanese fans, and they were saying that, you know, She sounded like a newbie, but they wanted to have the same experience as with Megumi, with Ranka, to hear her progress.
Maria, she was a new person, relatively. She had some roles, but of course her breakout role was Macross.
Exactly, to hear her progress. But I did learn, however, that the voice actress, is it Minori Suzuki?
I think so, yes.
Well, this is technically her first role. Apparently someone found out she was working part-time as a maid in some cafe or stage show.
Some kind of like underground idol.
She was working in some kind of maid idol. So for about 12 months before she went for the audition. So she'd had some kind of, you know, stage experience, putting on a persona.
Yeah.
And I thought her voice acting was great in this. But she runs into Hayate, who is a dock worker, with basically a really agile version of the loader from Aliens, but with wheels.
Yeah, I mean, he's not just a dock worker. I mean, yeah, and that's his job, but, I mean, he is using that loader like it's a ballet mech.
It's like Alto in the Wings of Farewell.
Not in a technical sense. I mean, he was dancing. The way he's going around moving boxes, it's like he's doing on like the tippy toe of the. It's doing a dance. It didn't seem like a kabuki thing. It was just more elegant, more quick, and basically not giving a crap about his fellow coworkers that were getting pissed off at him.
He was using two types of mecha. One of them was basically the Destroyer Cheyenne that we've seen way back from Macross Zero Frontier.
It's a mix between the loader from Aliens and then the Cheyenne.
Yeah, and where the weapons are on the arms of the Cheyenne, they drew in, like you said, places where you can load up like a forklift and pick up things, and he was doing it with, like you said, the acrobatic finesse of a ballet dancer.
But it's a total civilian dock working mech. It's not a Cheyenne with any
And this
no, Seven did it.
This scene happened just after he got his final pay slip, because he got fired, because he tends to follow whatever whimsical kind of mood he's in the day. When it's sunny, he takes a day off because he's feeling too good to work. When it's rainy, he takes a day off because it's raining. So he was basically, they acknowledge he's this genius kind of dock worker pilot, but he can't be relied upon, so he was getting laid off. And it's on this day that he comes across Freya stowing away in this crate. He helps her out because he's getting fired at the end of the day anyway, so who cares? The crew from her ship quickly catches up to her, but he rescues her. They escape on some kind of moped-looking, not moped, quadruped, a quad kind of bike.
Looked like Fujikoma, man.
It looked like one of those things from Magazine 2-3, like the hovering bike things.
No, it had wheels. It had like four wheels.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, that's what I said. It looked like a Fujikoma, Logikoma kind of thing.
Yeah.
But so they escape only to be grabbed by one of the genius girls. Yeah, it's the first appearance of Mirage, who is obviously not on security. She's just in the area. She hears someone yell stowaway, assumes that that's going to be the male on the bike, not the female on the back, and grabs Hayate, but...
assumes he's a pervert.
True. True. But she's in the middle of arresting him, and then Freya's like, wait, no, I'm the stowaway. Oh, crap.
Well, it was the same scene as from the Frontier movie, the part one, where he tries to help Cheryl, and then he ends up on top of her, and then the girl's like, oh, slapping him.
If you've seen any anime since the 90s, that scene,
right.
They fall over, and the man obviously invariably falls on top of the girl.
So,
and I don't even know how that happens, because she fell, like Freya fell from the top onto him, and then the next shot, he's on top of her.
Yeah, they ain't sure. I think he dived and missed. But anyway, so they
smooth operator.
They're in this, you know, kind of slummish kind of town, part of town, and then
to get back to Mirage, she mentions her name. She tells him, But they never go on. They never go on to talk about what's her relationship with Max, if there's a relationship.
Well, not yet. It's only episode one.
Yes, exactly. So don't. No, we're not. We don't know yet.
Wouldn't they have said, you know, aren't you the? And you were somehow related to Millennium Genius, the singer of Firebomber.
You expect to say Luke Skywalker, but he's just a myth.
Nah, dude. Most important question is, how big are her boobs when she gets to Zentradi size?
The things that have yet to be revealed. Now, in the middle of all this, the Vaz syndrome breaks out. But how does it break off? Adrian, what sets this thing off?
What was the question?
What sets this breakout of the virus
still
off?
Thinking about breasts.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, going into what I'm going to say is going to be exactly. Well, at that point, they switch to... there you are. They switch over to, not the loading docks, but kind of like where all the ships are docking. And you can see one of the Zentradi-class ships docked. And they're loading up. And there's actually a lot of regolts around. So they're setting something up to happen. And in the middle of basically all checking all the manifests and everything, one of the Zentradi flips out. And you hear this kind of weird, eerie music. And then they switch to this scene where it looks like this 300-foot pedestal. And the camera zooms up. And there's obviously this female singer up there. And it's total Macross 2 emulator scene.
Yeah. Completely.
Completely.
So it appears at this early stage that there's some kind of song setting off the Vaz syndrome that so far is mostly affecting Zentradi and makes them go berserk. Now, the thing is, the moment the virus kicks in, alerts go off everywhere, alarms go off. Delta Team, while Kure are all camped all over, the members of the Idol unit are all over the city because there had been outbreaks before and they'd estimated there was going to be one now. They're communicating via fingernail computers, which project holographic screens, and, you know, hair. Like, there is a lot of AKB 0048 and Symphogear influence in the way these girls are portrayed. I cannot stress that enough. But they're alerted. Delta Squadron is alerted. They launch. They all come down. And the girls are literally, they either appear on the scene, or in the case of the Miku-type girl, she literally leaps out of a cockpit of a Valkyrie mid-air and just somehow miraculously lands. All right, and all the girls are just literally standing there in the battlefield singing at these battle pods, at these regolts that are coming towards them. They do, however, have a secret weapon, and that is boomerangs, or should I say boomerang drones. But I forgot the most important part, is that when they do appear on the battlefield, as you said before, Adrian, they have complete magical girl transformation sequences from the legs to the top with a still frame with a portrait of each character.
Yes, just I'm not going to say it's not Sailor Moon style, it's not AKB style, it is straight out Smile Pre-Cure style. I mean, this show, at that point I was like, this show is going to get aired Sunday mornings at 10 a.m.
Yeah, you're showing the microphone in my face, but I got nothing. That's what they say.
No, like, after, as you said, Adrian, after these, you know, terrorist explosions and all this serious stuff and regolts coming up, and
yeah, we're at,
then suddenly you've got these girls jumping out of
cockpits, different show,
transforming. Some of them were shown later to have Cheryl's cluster jets under their skirts to land.
Yeah.
Right?
They really like that.
I like that they bring that back, right? Yeah. And then they have these, I don't know how they control them, these boomerang kind of drones, and each girl has a bunch of them. They fire from one of the Valkyries, I think?
There's a deployer thing.
Yeah, it's basically on the top of the Valk. It opens up like a missile hatch, and they all fly out.
Right.
And they fly out like drones, and the reason they look like boomerangs is because when they all link together, they form W's.
Right.
And also, like, the Macross Delta logo is that, isn't it?
Yeah.
That triangle is made up of those two boomerang things
combining together. It looks like one of those, no, two of them combined together.
Yeah, so now it makes sense.
And these drones can do anything. They can form platforms for the girls to stand on in mid-air. They can project holograms. They can create barriers that shield them from missile barrages. In other words, they are made of, like, Ikun's wings from The Wings of Farewell. They can protect from everything.
They
and they're amazing. There's no idea. Like, the girls just basically call out to them or throw a hand up, and these drones just do whatever. On the fly, they're projecting Cheryl Gnome slash Sharon Apple-style holograms of the concert to get in the aliens, to get into the Zentradi's faces.
You got to wonder at this point, why do they need the robots?
Why do they need
Valkyries? You know, because they did everything.
Oh, there's an important reason, and that's the big reveal here, which is, of course, at one point the drones run out of power. And this is the big reveal for the weapons container, this version at least, of the VF-31. It is a giant mobile phone battery. It basically projects electricity. It's an electricity ray to recharge the drones in the field. That is what that backpack is. However, it's a changeable unit, so ostensibly they'll have other things in it in the future. But the first reveal, it was a giant phone charger.
Well, there's one that has a radome on the top of it. And then they used the radome as a mini stage for one of the idols.
They were dancing, on the planet dance, on the radome.
Yeah.
And at this point, so much stuff's going on. So many characters are being introduced, and it's just chaos. It's total chaos. Where the first episode of Frontier, when the Vajra come, there's a bunch of chaos, but there's only three characters really being focused on, and Ozma coming in and out, and one guy dying, and other people dying. But this one, everyone's getting saved by like Precure people.
Wow.
So that kind of threw me off, kind of turned me off, because it's taking away any of, like, you know, people dying and the real, big battle going on.
And the fact the girls appear to be flying. At one point, Mikumo, Valkyrie 31 comes by her, she kind of throws a handle onto its shoulder joint before it transforms. She's literally riding the back of the Valkyrie on her feet like a jet ski. And then later on, she's on its shoulder. So those things we saw in the trailer of the girls that I thought were holographic projections, some of the projections are from the drones, but many of them are just the girls literally standing on the drones, floating there around in battle. These girls love to fight. They see a battle, like, right, we're in there. Like, they get there before the damn Valkyries do.
Yes.
So this is, as you said, Adrian, I agree, this is throwing me off, but then all hell breaks loose because the aerial knights warp in. They fold in. And it's obvious that they know what's going on. It seems as though they're connected to the song, which sets this off. They know the place is going to be in chaos. They fold in to cause major damage. They immediately target, after getting through the atmosphere of the planet, they target the Valkyrie team with missiles. They're like,
oh, yeah, you got to go through that scene. Because they fold in, and the Drakens come through, and they all have these wing attachments on them, which we never saw before, which turned out to basically be ghosts. Sometimes they're not as effective as ghosts, but they look like ghosts, and they also kind of serve as like their fold unit, because they fold in from space. They eject them, they use them to help kind of like...
We must find the Draken did not transform in this episode.
Yeah.
He did a lot of amazing maneuvers and firing weapons without even having to transform into Gurwalk mode. So also, it didn't need to.
The other thing I noticed, to me, the jump in 2D animation went up when the male pirates pilots showed up.
Pirates.
When the pilots came, when they were shown, like, because they have the most expression on their face because they're kind of cocky and kind of just like saying a bunch of crap to everybody. They're the ones that had expression and had like more detail in their hair, and even in their face, they had the most detail. So the quality went up when they appeared for them.
Also, spectacles. The guy who's very particular about his spectacles.
They made a note about him being really kind of almost obsessed over those glasses, and we saw just how, you know, he's like, how important it is that he wears them during battle.
Yeah, we saw him take out his glasses case, open the case, very slowly put on his spectacles. It was a whole thing. This is a 22-episode anime with, like, 1,000 characters, and they take out a lot of time to show him putting on his glasses. So a very important plot point.
Boys very girls. Specific, very particular about his glasses.
And then, of course, the following scene is...
And they all have one strand of glowing hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
Which they focus on from time to time, the camera, but never refer to it or say what they are. So we'll have to find out later what they are.
Obviously, it has to do with them being an alien race.
But you know who else has that?
Well, we'll get to that at the very end.
Do we?
Well... there's this great fight scene in space because they encounter Delta Squadron before they get to the planet.
Delta team. Terminology dating back in the first series.
Okay. They don't call it Delta Time, do they? That would be
true time. No, they call it Showtime.
Okay.
And it's just like watching the first episode of Frontier, and they almost like trick you into thinking they're using stock footage, and it turns out to be a whole different shot. I like that.
Also, even though the 171 is a 171. It comes up onto a deck for a launch, and what happens to that little thing?
It launches and then gets shot right out the launch gate. And then the Draken comes up and destroys the launch bay.
Yeah, yeah. There's a bit of a fake out there.
Yeah,
yeah. This is going to be the standard 171 launching. No, that little sucker got shot down immediately. Yeah. The 31 seem to be the only things that can go toe to toe with the Drakens. There's a lot of.
They had a tough time getting out there.
So then the Drakens break through. They get to the surface because they arrive on the scene and there are still battle pods going crazy. The Ralkure team ends up on the back foot. Some of them fall down. Some of them are injured. At which point
Mikumo goes down
and
the lead vocalist of the Ralkure,
one of the purple hair, but then she gets up and does a complete Cheryl in the Wings of Farewell. There's a lot of Wings of Farewell throwbacks in this one episode. The general frenetic nature and kinetic nature of the cutting of the fight scenes, very very Wings of Farewell. But she sticks her hands up, magically calls her drones like Cheryl activating a fold amp, and starts bringing it all together, singing back. And then the other girls start joining in. But no, then she gets reinforced by Freya, who starts running up, singing. She's causing some kind of fold distortion. She has some kind of power. And
she has, like, a strand of hair that has a little heart on it. And we've seen that heart, like, light up when she was surprised, or when she was happy or laughing or embarrassed or something in some previous scenes. Then it starts radiating some kind of energy.
Yeah.
And then they say, like, the people who are in the Delta Squadron say, hey, there's some other source of this kind of energy apart from us. So, obviously, she's got some kind of connection.
Oh, just, you know, when they first show her, you just think it's some kind of, like, hair accessory or something.
Yeah.
And they animated like they did Ronka's hair in the first episode. It wasn't really something you caught on earlier. It's just something animated in the scene. But obviously, she's part of that same race, which is attacking, because she's the one that stowed onto the planet.
Yeah, so it's a plot point.
One of the things they made a point of during the dialogue is everyone knows who the Bauer syndrome is. Everyone knows about the Valkyrie. The Aerionites is completely unknown and alien to everyone else, and Freya's power, that was completely unknown to everyone.
Right. So. And the thing is, they break in, they fold in, knowing what they're doing, knowing there's going to be catastrophe, knowing to target. Well, they call out Valkyrie by name.
Yes.
Right, so. And then the episode pretty much ends with Freya running up to join Mikumo and get their song. They're singing together, it ends there. So, there's one point with Freya which I think leads us into the main discussion of all this, because people listening are probably now thoroughly, thoroughly confused.
Like us.
So we are. Yeah.
Right? So it seems to me that Freya combines certain elements of Basara, i.e. wanting to sing and having this amazing song energy, and Milen, in which she's trying to escape getting married, which brings us to something Kawamori said. This show is basically a combination of Macross 7 and Macross Plus. This episode 1, or hang on. But instead of merging these two, they're like two separate entities smashing against each other. This episode had a higher percentage of 7 than Plus, in my opinion. But they said in the talk show afterwards that the tonal shift in episode 2 would be so dramatic that people would go back and reassess number 1. And in fact, for the first 5 episodes, each episode has a very big tonal shift. So it's almost like you've got these two portions. It's like you're mixing a cocktail of 7 and Plus, and they're putting them in different quantities as the series goes on.
Yeah. Yeah, they never really... they said they wanted to get away from what Frontier was doing, right? Whether our... It doesn't matter what we thought about it, right? I mean, you know, Adrian was saying it was a lot like Frontier, right? In many ways. But when we had the talk event, they said basically that they wanted to get away from everything that made Frontier successful, because then it would be just repeating the same thing. So I think that's probably why they chose to go back to 7 and Plus. Yeah. In terms of characterization, I thought it was the exact opposite of Frontier, because Frontier's lead, Alto, was like, he knew what he wanted. He wanted to fly in the sky, and he was very stressed out that he couldn't do that, blah, blah. And then Ranka was kind of like the girl who wanted to sing but didn't know how.
Here, it's the opposite. The guy really doesn't know what he wants to do with his life. He's tried lots of many different things, and he's been disappointed every time. And the girl, you know, she stows away and runs into battle, risking her life, just so she could go to the audition. And Hayate is so surprised with this. Why would you risk your life just for this thing? And she's like, because it's worth risking my life for. Haven't you ever done anything worth risking your life? And he's like, no, I can't find anything. And so I thought that character dynamic was a lot more interesting this time around.
I think it was really reflective of trends among some Japanese youth. It was almost kind of soshoke. You know, as in, like, I don't really care about any of this.
Yeah, and we know that Kawamura has been trying to address that for quite a while. He's always, whenever he's interviewed about stuff like that, he's like, yeah, so how do I know?
You
know, in the yeah, exactly. In the Macro 7 commentaries, he talks about, like, we wanted, this character, Basara, to embody this, like, really energetic spirit, and we want young people to be more energetic and to change society. And they're like, okay, 20 years on, has it worked? What happened? It's even worse now. So they're all laughing together.
One interesting thing is when you see previous Macross series, usually the point of view, the perspective is that male character, be it, you know, Hikaru from the original, Aoto, and so on. Would you arguably say that the not only was the focus on Freya, she moved the plot more than...
Yes.
It's like, what would you say, at this point, all we know is Hayate saves Freya. But Freya was the main motivator of all of the action in the story so far.
Yeah, yeah. She's dragging him along,
yes.
Right? And eventually, you know, I'm predicting... Not predicting, because I know he'll... Kawamura's going to try to surprise us somehow. But I'm sure you're supposed to think that Freya and her commitment to her dream is going to motivate Hayate to do something with his own life.
Well, character profile shows him in a Delta jacket, so...
Oh, is it?
Saves Freya's from getting deported. Not like, you know, from being squashed or anything like that. Or, he's not a pilot. He's not anything right now.
Not
he's
yet.
Just some common guy that just helps some girl out who's nuts. I mean, the girl's nuts.
Yeah, she's very nuts. So,
are you saying she's nice or nuts?
Nuts.
Oh. I think she's nice.
Okay.
She's nuts, but she might be like Basara, and right. That's the key thing.
Yeah.
This being the Macross world.
Right.
Yeah.
So this show has far more Seven in it than I was expecting. Even if it was to have Seven elements, I was expecting them to merge things more towards Frontier. This has stylistic trappings that invoke Frontier, but it thematically... The way it works, the elements in it, the characters are either more towards Seven or more towards Plus. There's very little that says Frontier in this.
With
the
qualifier, like you were saying, that the staff made sure to note it. This is the first episode. It won't be the same tone for the future episodes.
Right,
so we'll see how much of that balance shifts back and forth.
Because some of the Japanese fans we were talking to afterwards were actually saying they're worried whether this will pull in the Frontier crowd, who they're supposed to be. They're supposed to be appealing to, because it so only resembles Frontier on a very surface visual level.
Well, who cares, really? And I say that like because Frontier, it wasn't aiming to pull in the old crowd only. It was appealing to new fans, right? And it's been 7 years since Frontier, so I'm most concerned with how are people going to approach this without any prior knowledge of
Macross.
That's
what I'm hoping to do with someone I know that with
no
clue about Macross, and seeing what she thinks walking in, because yeah, it was a huge amount of information story thrown in 25 minutes.
But I thought it was longer. I couldn't believe it was only 25 minutes.
I'd have to say that like in 2007 when they showed the first the culture edition, I don't think the majority of fans cared about the history of what Macross was. There was no interest in it at that point,
yeah.
Even less than today.
Right.
When I worked at the animation school, nobody even knew there was Zero. If anybody knew anything, they knew Seven. They didn't know anything about Two.
But were they confused?
Macross.
And no one knows anything
these
about
are people
two.
At an animation school.
Yeah, yeah.
That are religiously watching anime or teaching animation, and I don't think. The backstory to Macross was what made Frontier work. It just took off.
Yeah, yeah. But was it confusing for them? It wasn't.
I don't think it doesn't matter. I mean, even the intro of what happened isn't as detailed as the one in Seven. Yeah, they don't.
No, it isn't, obviously, yeah, because that goes on for like 5 whole minutes yeah. every episode.
And you get the nice picture of like Hikaru and everybody with Britai and the Mega Road flying off, but there's really no deep explanation, and basically the first appearance of Cheryl pretty much sealed the deal, I think.
Yeah.
So. I think one of the differences is that the first episode of Frontier, they walk through things that would for both new fans and old fans, as if you don't really need to know some of the background material, as opposed to this series, which felt like there was a lot of things that people needed to know as they were, and they didn't sit and explain it, just kept on going with the story. Just Shintaro was never really explained who they are, what they are. It just expected.
And we must point out, there are a lot of throwbacks to Shintaro stuff, from Mecha to oh, there was a Regal with this huge overarching missile rack on his back.
Ridiculous.
Oh yeah.
That is the most missiles I've ever seen on a Regal.
It was like an arc of missiles. There was Entradi popping up all over the place, being affected by the VAR syndrome. There was, as you said, like a cruiser or a battleship docked in the harbor at one point. There are all these. Oh, and Hayate's boss who fired him was at least part Zentradi by the looks of it.
Not to mention the captain, which we only see on view screens. We never actually see in person.
And yeah, well, we
go
don't.
Ahead. Go ahead, what? Tell the song?
No one fights like a stone, no one drinks like a stone, no one's neck quite is incredibly thick like a stone.
That is because the captain's design in that initial reveal, at least, looks a bit like
Gaston!
A Disney character.
Very so, appropriate for being in a bar.
And speaking,
that should be the opening theme.
Speaking of Zentradi influence,
all
right. Kawamori or someone mentioned in the talk show that the MC asked specifically about Mirage. It's like, when you hear the name Genius, you know,
everyone
what do you think?
Thinking.
Everyone wants to know, and they wouldn't say much, but they did say, well, her ears are important.
Yeah.
As in, I think there's some Zolan in there.
No, I don't think that's what they meant.
Zentradi also have those ears.
Zentradi,
well,
yeah.
But not on that angle.
I know, but that's just a different design style, aesthetic.
He
did let it slip, though, that it might be third generation, right? Because he said, you know, Macross is all about the number three.
Yeah, so,
and so what's
so
wrong
three
with
pillars,
the third generation?
So now you've got the three generations of genus.
Right. You know, chronologically makes more sense because, you know, we're now in 2067. Macross 7, which had the second generation, was 2045. Now there's a new generation here.
Right, so while it's yet to be officially confirmed, the hints we're being given is that she's a granddaughter, which raises a question, of course, of who's the mother, which is a whole other podcast.
Oh, and we don't know if, no, we're talking grandfather or father, if she is related to Max, yes.
So I think that pretty much sums up what happens on screen. What did you guys think about the music?
Well,
the BGM, I don't know, the BGM was kind of whatever, but the songs were okay. Pretty good.
First cue we had that there was more than one composer, it's just there was different elements of the music that sounded different from each other.
Right, they showed Freya listening to music on like a Walkman kind of, on a MP3 player. Hayate was listening to music while he was working. I think I had like three vocal tracks, like two in the course of the show, and then the ending song that I was singing, which is the song from the trailer, Ikenai Borderline.
Unreachable Borderline, yeah.
And they used the music from the first preview trailer, Tamashii Hoshin's, as well, which is the BMG.
Yeah, the BMG I thought was kind of stock-ish.
Right.
Didn't stand out to me.
But it's the same music in the first trailer.
Right. There was no opening.
Well, there was no opening for the original DeCulture edition.
Right, so we don't know what the opening song's going to be yet.
Thank God it's not going to be Maya Sakamoto. I hope to God it is not Maya Sakamoto.
Maya.
Don't share that opinion. Definitely don't share that opinion.
You know what was really great? Not the music, but the... There was no opening, obviously, but the way that the logo came up, that was really cool.
Oh,
like the design, yeah.
And then the two trip.
That was really stylish. Spinning, I liked it. You know? I hope it works.
Macross has had a history of doing that kind of stuff. Like, whatever you might think of Macross 7, the opening is still eye-catching to this
day. The opening is the most fantastic thing.
The thing I'm most curious about is, I know everyone's kind of like mentioning ska with the music, that is there. The intro, the way that one, the main song, especially what they end it with, because that's the song that she joins in on. It works in the... It didn't work in the trailer for me, but it works in the show. But comparing it back to Frontier, where... Because at the time, I was working at Akihabara. And from the Saturday after the showing of the DeCulture edition, that was the song that replaced ELO's Twilight.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because up until then, you heard Twilight all in Akihabara because Densho Otoko. Yeah, you know? Mm-hmm. And this other really goddamn awful song. I can't remember, and I don't.
But they must have been playing that for a long time.
They were playing because
that was like 2004 or something.
Well, it was 2005.
But the Frontier was 2007 or 8.
No, I arrived 2005 July, and I arrived the week of the broadcast of the TV series of Densho Otoko. So it lasted a long time, and because all the news shows were using it. Anytime it was on TV, you heard Twilight. And then that was the first song that was just played over and over and over. And I'd be curious to see if that happens again, because I don't think it will. I don't think it'll have the legs that
Interesting to see how much of an impact this thing has.
I'm not predicting as much as once Frontier. I don't think they can capture that lightning twice.
No.
One of the things I was thinking about when it comes to the music is that each of the different series has a distinctive kind of print when it comes to the style of its music. If you hear a particular song, even if you can say, oh, it's Frontier, oh, it's Zero, it's the first Macross. Yeah. I think you can say, even at this point, we've only heard the snippet, that if you heard that song, it's identifiably from Delta, as opposed to any of the other series.
Well, just from the intro, but I mean, you didn't even need to know the lyrics to Cheryl Noam's song. Everyone would just be Mo, take it, and that was it. Yeah. It was everywhere.
Yeah, that's true.
So, all
right. So, final thoughts.
Noted is that Kyle Moore was talking about the things that distinguish the different series from each other, and he was talking about, like, for example, in Macross 7, it was a singer who was also a pilot, and then what was the theme that he said that was of this particular series? It was a team effort, song fighting team, and that's one of the themes that stood this series apart from the others. We haven't had a team that fights with song before, seemed like this. Jamming unless he
birds.
Counts.
Jamming
yes.
Birds.
Yes.
Macross 7 did it first, but the song came from Macross 2.
But they were serious in Macross 2. Macross 7 did it as a joke.
Well, we're pushing an hour, so any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
I thought it was great. I'm looking forward to more. It's not perfect. It is chaotic. I'm not following it. Gwyn, you telling me the story right now is making a lot more of things that I witnessed make sense, because actually I'd totally forgotten that Hayate had been fired in that episode. So much stuff happened that I thought I was watching a 45-minute episode. Like halfway through I thought, is this longer than 25?
Well, as I was saying before, I've got my notes I was taking immediately after, and it's like, a galaxy map, syndrome, all terrorists, oh crap, went boom, some stowaways, good voice acting, holy crap, this guy's getting fired, but they're on the wrong planet, oh there's some mirage, emulators, oh more shit's going boom.
All right, I get it.
Like, it's crazy. It was
you know that during the first writing session, Kawamori burst into the room and said, all right, take this down, right, we're gonna have like a kind of oh, the bathroom's ready. All right, I'm going to go. See you later.
Subtle. I mean, the boomerang drones remind me of nothing more than AKB-48, the kind of technology they're using in that. That combined with the fingernail computers,
which
is very much like taking those futuristic technology plus magical girl trends.
Take away the three-mode transformable fighters. If you were shown any scene from this series, you would think it was AKB-48 or Simple Gear. And if you were not told, it was Macross.
I guess in like 30 years from now, we'll be seeing computer nails, just like the original Macross, because that was like the stuff that actually came to fruition. Back to the Draken, we did see how the under cannon functioned.
Yes. Very effectively.
Yeah, it's actually it's kind of like the Millennium Falcon hidden turret.
Another thing you can think of is the SV-51's pop out hand that turns around. That reminded me of.
That was the only feature we got to see aside from the
pivoting rockets. Pivoting thrusters that pop out, like you were saying. Yeah.
So the Draken has these ghost-looking things. It's got the gun at the bottom, which is basically a gun turret, but we haven't seen a transform.
Yeah,
and it does a decent Itano Circus.
There's a lot of Itano Circus, even though he probably had nothing to do with it.
No.
Well, as far as sitting through it, not knowing as much Japanese as you guys or understanding what is being said on stage, it was a mess. It was chaotic. I didn't like a lot of it. Animation-wise, character-wise, I liked it. I liked it, but I can see where people that are going to watch the raw version that first shows up, newer fans will probably like it. They'll see that it's more along the lines of what they want. Older fans are definitely going to hate it. Yes, I'm talking about you, Graham. But going by what Renato, Egan, and Gwen had just said, if the tone does change, I'm really interested in where it goes. But it definitely was just make it frontierish, get everyone kind of hooked to see the next episode. If it continually gets darker or different, as long as it's different, I don't care. But that whole Precure stuff, that really was a turnoff. other than that, mechs look cool. The good guy Valks, if they're the good guys, we don't really know. Whatever. Like, they're not too far removed from what we've already seen. They're not really the main thing to look at. It's the girls. The girls look nice. There's too many. The biggest problem, I think, with the whole entire episode is they introduced too many characters, gave them all a scene, and not enough time because the thing just jumps everywhere, and you didn't really need them all there. Because you didn't see Clan for a few episodes, but she's in the opening. You don't see the Pixie Squadron, and here they just threw everything at you in the first episode, and it was just too chaotic for me and overblown.
Fish Guy isn't in there. Fish Guy. There's
Chuck.
Chuck? Yeah, Chuck.
Chuck.
Chuck was piloting. He hit on the girl in the very beginning. He was
God!
He was like, "Hey, baby, why did you?" He was in the. Wasn't he the pilot of the plane with the Miku girl? Yeah.
Really?
He
was on the radar.
Oh my God!
He's like,
"Well,
you want to go out sometime?" She's like, "Not interested."
See? Okay.
His face is really small because he's too big for his plane.
Yeah.
Anyways,
that goes to show how chaotic it is. I didn't notice.
That was the biggest problem, I thought. But most anime right now does it like that anyway.
Yeah. But Kamori and everyone in the talk show, they addressed that. They said it is chaotic, and they switch back from different character scenes all the time, so it might be confusing or something. And they're very insecure as to how the audience is going to react. So we'll see.
Yeah. Tenjin expressed a lot of insecurity. It's like, please, guys, give that a chance. Support it.
It wasn't like begging or anything.
When it comes to the first part of any Macross project, there's two things I look for. Number one, that is different, and mostly vastly different from whatever came before it, be it Frontier, Zero, the first series. And number two, which I would ask for, not just Macross, for any project, anime or non-anime, live action or animated, do I want to know what's the rest of the story? And I think it did both. We'll see if the rest of the story is worth that promise, but it's got my interest.
Okay. Well, look, for all our talking about magical girls, I want to stress that I think while they were the focal point, they weren't all that was there. There were a lot of throwbacks to older Macrosses. There was even the possible Macross 2 reference.
I would say, in terms of references, Frontier did a lot more of that in the first episode.
So Frontier was direct homages, whereas
the 25th anniversary work.
Right.
That was the point of it.
And that was the point. Whereas this seems to be actual. Okay, this has happened in the world. Cheryl has shown you can fly with jet gas clusters. Now the girls have them as backup.
It reminds me a lot of some of the Gundam series that are happening now, well after the first one-year war stories. All these things that we take for granted because we now know they can do. Beam shields and barriers. It's like they assume the people, the fans, know that these things exist in this universe, so they put them into the story and expect people to accept it and go with it.
Right, right. And Kawamori was saying that too, right?
Yes.
At the beginning, like, there's nothing really you can do with Macross to surprise people because we all know that at the end singing is going to save the galaxy, right? So he just says, all right, we'll just start off with that.
Right.
And put it in there.
We're going to put the girls in the battlefield rather than songs being what it comes around to being the solution. They're there in the beginning as a deterrent.
Right.
So,
which was done in Macross 2.
So what I'm saying here is there was a lot more Valk action than we're probably touching on. A lot of the 31... The Delta Squadron or Delta Team's movement was synchronized with the idols. They were moving in tandem. They were very much part of the performance, whereas that was when the idols were on screen. When the 31s are up in space fighting the Drakens, it was more like really a regular dogfight.
Macross Plus.
Well, yeah, and that leads me exactly again. This is 7 and Plus, which is not what I was expecting, and they are smashing up against each other. It's like this battle of philosophies. I'm waiting to see how that tonal shift may change.
Yeah, it's like you're changing channels.
Right. It's like, hey, idols, well, we're up in space now. Let's change it to Macross Plus. All this action is great. Wait, we're back on Earth. How is she flying along with gas jets under her scope? I don't care, but she's singing while she does it.
The question is that off-putting or not?
I found it rather schizophrenic.
I enjoyed it just because I was in Japan. I was around for when 1994, 1995, and they were telling us, oh, we've got the blue of Macross, and we've got the red of Macross, Macross 7. And they gave it, you know, two different projects so people can enjoy both. Now we're getting them combined together in one series at the same time. So it reminded me of a lot of that time where you can get a bit of both. And for someone who likes both, that's great.
So there you have it. 2016 is the new 1994. Speaking of which, we do not yet have a broadcast date. Now, I'm expecting that they will probably announce a broadcast date when they do the TV special on December 31st. So cross your fingers. I do not know when this... We had no hint of when this will
air. The closest thing that we have to a clue, and it was also announced today, was that there's a Macross manga series, the Macross Delta manga series, that's starting Comic Rex, and they're saying it's starting next spring, 2016. What does that mean? We'll find out.
All right, then. I think we've said pretty much everything we can say. 2016 will be the new 1994. 7 and Plus living together. It's insanity. It's schizophrenic. It's rather crazy. We don't know where it's going to go. And while it might not have been what any of us expected...
Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
So there you go. Macross Delta.
We're children of the 80s, aren't we?
Macross Delta, mass hysteria. And with that, this is Macross Speaker Podcast, folding out.
Just to all you whining fanboys out there, get over it. Oh, you want to hear what I really thought? Oh, okay, well, let me just say this one thing, all right? What the hell did I just watch? Listen, I don't even care about the girly windy boys, the whole magical Transylvania thing going on. Fine. Let's talk about robots in disguise, all right? But I mean, seriously? VAR syndrome? Excuse me? Hello? That is so obviously the hate plague. Don't you remember me pulling a Jesus, rising from the dead, and saving everyone in the galaxy from extinction? I'm, like, standing right here, for God's sakes. Return of Optimus Prime Part 2, 1987. No? Doesn't ring any bells? Well, how quickly we forget. As long as you all remember love. It was like the worst thing since Unicron, you know. Kind of a big deal. It's a good thing there was some kick-ass Stan Bush rock music to the Matrix to, like, totally Deus Ex Machina everything back to normal. Twice. I swear, if they have the nerve to make this Delta thing also finish with singing Saving the Day, I am going to go insane. Holy floating head, I'm coming for you. Give me your face. My name is Optimus Prime, and this has been Macross Speaker Podcast. Transform and fold out!